good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. On a beautiful Sunday edition of the podcast. Don't get many of these, so cherish it. And I know you're going to, not just because of the topic or the timing, but also because of the guests that we have, because today's episode is absolutely fantastic. We're on the guest mock draft series. We're on to picks 19 and 20, the Washington football team and the Chicago Bears. Giving you a little bit of a recap before we get to those picks, bring in our guests. Trevor Lawrence went number one to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Zach Wilson, number two to the New York Jets. Justin Fields, number three, to the San Francisco 49ers. Trey Lance to the Atlanta Falcons at number four. Ja'Marr Chase, number five, to the Cincinnati Bengals. Kyle Pitts, number six, to the Miami Dolphins. This is the part where I like just start screwing up the numbers, and I hate it, and I dread this every single year. Jaylen Waddle, number seven, to the Detroit Lions. Penei Sewell, number eight, to the Carolina Panthers. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, number nine, to the Denver Broncos. Patrick Surtain, number 10, to the Cowboys. Rashawn Slater, 11, to the Giants. Devontae Smith, number 12, to the Eagles. Darisaw, number 13, to the Chargers. Quiddy Pay, number 14, to the Vikings. J.C. Horn, number 15, to the New England Patriots. Caleb Farley, number 16, to the Arizona Cardinals. Micah Parsons, number 17, to the Las Vegas Raiders. And then Azeez Ojulari to the Miami Dolphins at 18. Woo! Made it! Only messed up once.
I wanted so badly to just start getting a couple names ahead of you and just start blocking out the names. Filling the cells in with black.
Would have absolutely...
ultimate sabotage.
Would have absolutely panicked. I probably should have the sheet set up to where I'm not looking like far left, far right for every single name as I'm trying to say them in order. You know? But organizational skills. That's something to work on for next year. Always can be better, right? Ben, we've got the Washington football team up here at number 19. And then the Chicago Bears at number 20. These are two very interesting teams, two very quarterback-needy teams. But Mac Jones is the only guy who is left on the board. Do we think one of our guests takes the bait?
Right, we're officially in such territory. It is maybe actually take the Mac Jones swing o'clock here with Washington and Chicago, both with long-term quarterback needs and only short-term solutions. Maybe, but that's why it's fun to let the analysts pick who they want to pick, because instead of saying, oh, Mac Jones would go here, so I guess I'll make the choice, it's, you know what, no, I don't want Mac Jones.
Right.
So that's why the analysis is what's fun, and then the mock is also cool, but like the best part is getting the guests on and hearing what they think. And then if they want to say, oh, if this were to happen, it would be Mac Jones, but I'm taking Rashad Bateman, then all the power to him.
Yeah, and we need to shut up here, because we've got two amazing guests that we need to get to right away so we could just get the most airtime for them on the show. So let's get to it. All right, so this brings us up to number 19, the Washington football team. Or, you know, I got to give them their props here. The playoff and NFC East champion Washington football team. Ben, I know that that's, not the best words that could have come out of my mouth there, but it's an interesting topic here because Washington, they made the playoffs, they eked in, and what was not great division last year. And so that brings up a lot of questions of where they might believe they are as a team, what they could be looking for moving forward, the kinds of players that they want to add in the draft. And so with such an interesting situation, had to get Rhiannon Walker, who covers the team very, very closely from The Athletic, on with us. Rhiannon, thank you so much for joining us.
Trevor, Ben, thank you all for having me. I appreciate being thought of as always. And, again, I wish people could hear our conversations before the podcast got started. They would get a good laugh out of that.
The real hot takes drop before the mics are on.
Look, you know, we often say, like, we don't do the podcast before the podcast, but I really did not even expect to go into the fact that cats roam like part of the mafia to protect your house. So, but that's actually what happened before the pod, and you guys will never be able to hear it. Maybe we'll have to recreate it one day, but can't be here. We got to talk about the Washington football team here. And my first question for you, I just want to bring in that situation that I kind of alluded to earlier where Washington made the playoffs, and they made the playoffs, and I don't think a lot of people were expecting them to under Ron Rivera in his first season. I think that they believed that they had the right guy at the top with that hiring, but making the playoffs the first year, being 7-9, my question to you is, where does this team think they are? Because when you're a playoff team, you know, it gives you room to say like, oh, let's be aggressive in the draft. Like, let's go like trade up or get a couple of one or two good players that we think can put us over the top to compete. Does Washington really see themselves in that light? Or do you think that maybe Ron Rivera and the people there are a little bit more level-headed and say, hey, we made the playoffs last year. It was very nice. We're trying to build off of it, but we're still building as a team.
You know, the way I know where Rivera's head is at is because he said in his initial press conference day one, when he walked into the auditorium, he said, I'm looking to build this team into a successful team. You know, obviously that's going to take some time, but sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, he wanted to do it faster than what he did in Carolina. And Carolina's first time going to the playoffs under him was, I believe, what, 2013, if I remember correctly. He had taken over in 2011. Mm-hmm. And obviously they went to the Super Bowl in 2015. So, and that was a year after they had they had a losing record going into the playoffs. So, in 2014. So all this to say that he expected this team to be a faster rebuild than the Carolina team. I don't know if he expected it to be in year one necessarily, but I can tell you when he figured it out is when you looked around the rest of the NFCs, which all the rest of us could clearly see.
Right.
It's bad. It was really bad. And so now one of the other things that they said, him and Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator, was that they thought this offense, obviously it's not where they want it to be. I think they could be honest about that, but they expected in a year or two for the offense to really pick up and match the defense. And what we saw with the defense is that it's at near elite levels. You get a new linebacker, you maybe bring in some safety help. You've already upgraded your cornerback spot. And this could be a dominant defense. You think maybe not the Baltimore Ravens 2000s, Baltimore like dominant defense, but it's also possible because Jack Del Rio was the linebackers coach on that defense. So if anybody would know how to get a team to that level, it most certainly will be that guy at defensive coordinator. But the offense, now you sit there, you brought in Curtis Samuel. The team was able to do enough to get into the playoffs with four different quarterbacks, which included Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen, Tyler Heinicke, and Alex Smith, who we all acknowledge did not play since 2018, but he was able to take them 5-1 and get them into the playoffs down the stretch. And then, of course, you get into Tyler Heinicke, who was just taking exams in November. And he put up more of a struggle against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense than anybody else they saw the rest of those three games in the playoffs that they played after them. So they're sitting there thinking to themselves, okay, wait, we have the running back room pretty well solidified. You have all five starters on the offensive line coming back. And the team played much better down the stretch with the offensive line. I mean, especially a guy like Cornelius Lucas, he only gave up 2 sacks in all the 8 starts that he had. He played in all 16 games. You extended Chase Roullier, who's your starting center in this team. You have Brandon Scherff back on the franchise tag. Morgan Morris is still here through 2023, I believe. And Wes Schweitzer. And there's still competition that could be had there with Sadiq Charles because he had a dislocated kneecap. And so hopefully he's able to stay a little bit more healthy this year to kind of really gauge where he's at as well, too. That could be an upgrade on the left side of the line. But yeah, they seriously believe now, especially with Curtis Samuel, Adam Humphries is what I would call maybe a soft lock to make the team. You never know what will happen in training camp. But Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin obviously complement each other. You bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who for a lot of people, they didn't really see the matchup. But what it is it's maybe it's in the anticipation and the timing. One of the big things about a Scott Turner or North Turner offense is, one, how fast can you get the ball out? But number two, how well can you time and how well do you understand the offense in and of itself? Because if you understand those very basic tenets, you'll see plays like the one that Ryan Fitzpatrick had, his very last one with the Dolphins, where you know where your guy's supposed to be so you can throw the ball up while somebody is basically taking your head off because you know where it's supposed to be. That's how well he knew that offense. Mm. That's what they need here in D.C. is they need a quarterback who knows the offense, one who could stretch the field. Ryan Fitzpatrick, even as somebody who's going to turn 39 later this year, still got some wheels on him. Yeah, they feel like
nice.
I feel like they can dominate at this point. The New York Giants are probably the team I would say. I mean, if the Cowboys stay healthy, I would say they're probably the next biggest threat. But you saw with the New York Giants that if you look at even some of their games, there were a lot of close games. Yes, they did lose, I believe it was 10 of those games. But at the end of the day, they played very closely in a lot of those games. It was very competitive. So that's another team that they kind of have their eye on. But they feel like if they can get the offense to not, how do I say this, have to be dragged behind by the defense. I mean, where you have a game where two rookies have to score touchdowns in order to beat the San Francisco 49ers because the offense is not putting touchdowns on the board. If the offense can just do that, this is a defense that can pretty much hold people to 20 points or less. That's typically what they did down the stretch. So yeah, they think this is a team that can go quite far this year and the years beyond.
Now, that offensive step forward is really interesting because the Curtis Samuel addition is this, the wide receiver room desperately needed some help. He comes in. Terry's obviously your wide receiver one. They tested the depth a lot with different players over the course of last year. They had injury that they had to deal with. So they've got some you know, draft Twitter names in Antonio Gandy-Golden and Kelvin Harmon, but there's still, I think, room for a third wide receiver to establish themselves. And then that left side of the line that, you know, Rulier to Scherf to Moses is locked up. That's money. But that left side of the line, right, with Cornelius Lucas and Wes Schweitzer and Sadiq Charles, that's where there's going to be competition. For you, what's the bigger, not red flag, where's the bigger gap? What's the bigger concern? If Washington's offense is really going to take that step forward to meet the defense, is it going to need an improvement on the offensive line on that left-hand side and get that locked down, or is it going to need an addition at wide receiver? What's the spot on day two you think they're going to give the most attention?
So I'm actually going to throw a little bit of a curveball because there was a position I didn't name that I think is actually probably a little bit more of a glaring need than even left side of the line or even the wide receiver room, because they have, well, I mean, again, we saw what they did with the left side of the line. They did play much better towards the end. And of course, again, we did mention Sadiq Charles as a player to keep an eye on because he could elevate it. We just don't know because he was so injured throughout training camp. I'm going to say number two tight end, though, is the big one. You did add pieces to the wide receiver room. I do think on day two that there is the potential for them to take a wide receiver. One of the things that I looked at coming into the draft season was what if Marty Herney and what if Martin Mayhew done, historically speaking, during their times as GM at their respective teams. They like taking wide receivers in the second round. So I could believably see that. I mean, shoot, let's face it. Mayhew likes taking wide receivers in the first round too. So, I mean, I think that is definitely a position where they could stand to add some additional resources there. But number two for me is tight end. The others aside, there are people in place. There are, I mean, even behind Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin, Adam Humphries, if I think he's a soft lock, there's Cam Sims. You don't know what you're necessarily going to get out of Stephen Sims Jr. He had a down year last year. So that's something to keep an eye on for sure. Those are things where I'm like, okay, you have some people that are kind of in that room, or Kelvin Harmon as well too. We don't know what he'll look like after this ACL, but he's also there. Antonio Gandy-Golden. They have some people there that, you know, if they decide to step up, they might not be in as bad a shape as we think they are. We don't know for a fact. But number two tight end, behind Logan Thomas last year, the other tight ends had a collective 3 catches for 18 yards.
Not great.
So if Logan Thomas had gotten injured, I don't think it takes too much of a mathematician or a genius to figure out, hey, if this guy that had 6 touchdowns last year, and he was one of your top receivers as well too, if he was to get injured, how much worse that offense would have looked. Like, if you really think about how many times, like, he was somebody who got them the first down, or like even in that Pittsburgh Steelers game where he didn't get the 4th down, which was kind of questionable, and everything else like that, not to completely rehash it, but it was a, I think it was like a 4th and 13 or something along those lines, or a 3rd and 13. And the man broke 2 tackles to almost get all 13 of those yards. He's just a hustler. He's a hardworking guy. You need somebody else behind him that's going to elevate the play of this offense. And for, especially Scott Turner offense, if you want to go 12, if you don't have another number two tight end who's actually capable of really effectively running 12, then you have hurt yourself in that regard. And they don't have that right now with this team. Jeremy Sprinkle was a guy that they drafted, and he was not particularly helpful with the offense last year. Again, just having that one catch. Marcus Bowles, somebody else that they liked. We'll see what happens there in training camp. But I definitely think that it's really the number two tight end spot that they need to look at more so than anything else, because it's yet to be addressed so far through free agency, and it's not to say they won't. But sometime between now and that draft, that has to be a position that they have to find a way to bring in some additional resources, because again, 3 catches for 18 yards from your number 2, 3, and 4 tight end, it's just not acceptable in an offense.
You mentioned kind of what they would be looking for from their quarterback, and they bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you outline why it makes sense why they bring in a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick, because a lot of it is about timing and knowing things and being able to anticipate and have stuff in rhythm. And Mac Jones, where, you know, if he's not sitting there at number 3 overall for some mock drafts, sometimes he makes it down to the middle portions of the first round. And there are some teams and some draft analysts that say, like, okay, well, if Mac makes it within range of the Washington football team, or even if he just makes it to 19, this is a potential landing spot for them. My question that kind of goes along with that is, how much do you think this team believes in Taylor Heinicke? Because you mentioned that was a fun and entertaining performance that he put out against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year in the playoffs, and he really gave them almost their best run for their money before the Super Bowl. And so I think that there is reason for people to believe that they would not draft a quarterback, but do you think they have that same mindset when it comes to maybe a successor to Ryan Fitzpatrick, or truly the long term? How much do you think Mac Jones would really be on their radar?
As a non-committal right there.
I was like, because here's the thing. I mean, how much faith do they have in Taylor Heinicke? They signed a guy that they could have just tender one, and they gave him a 2-year extension for $8.75 million. That's how much it could go up to. So I think that tells you, one, right there, how much they like the guy. Number two, the other thing, you know, you guys watch football. There are a lot of things that coaches and people will say that they're not really saying, but you just have to listen very closely. One of the things that stood out to me, and one of the ways that I kind of knew that he would come back, is because when they had the press conference with Martin, with Martin Mayhew and with Marty Herney, Marty Herney brought him up twice without anybody asking about Taylor Heinicke. We did not ask him a question about Taylor Heinicke. He just talked about how much he liked him. And I was like, that's, again, that's an example of you have to read between the lines. If we're not asking you about a guy and you're gushing about a guy, that means there's something happening. And a week later, he gets signed to a 2-year extension. Reading between the lines in a situation like that, I think they like him quite a bit. Of course, they had their time together in Carolina. Same thing with Kyle Allen as well, too. You don't necessarily just trade a fifth-round pick, especially for a guy that is potential to get released. If you don't really like the guy, I think he has the potential to do some things. And if I can't remember Kyle's record right now off the top of my head, I think it was like 5-0 when he was a starter. It was like 5-0 in his first five starts, excuse me, 2018.
He played really well. I don't remember what the exact win total was, but I remember that.
I think he had like five. He had a 5-game winning streak, and it started when he went down to New Orleans and beat them down there in 2018, if I'm remembering correctly. And so, he's a guy that if he doesn't do too much and you give him all the right resources, he could do well. I'm not saying he's like your franchise quarterback, but I'm just saying that he's very serviceable. And with Taylor Heinicke, I mean, he even admitted he played lights out because he wanted to show people, hey, I can still play even though I haven't been in the league for some time now. And he put it all out there. I think that shows to a lot of them that, hey, this is a guy that can ball. You put up 23 points against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. No other team that faced them in the playoffs got even close. Not even the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So this guy who was just literally down at ODU trying to get his degree figured out, finishing exams, put up 23 points on this fantastic defense. And I don't remember if they led the league in sacks last year or something along those lines, but he didn't even get sacked until the very end of the game when they had those final two sacks. He's a gunner. I mean, he just plays lights out. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, they have the luxury of, let's say, I mean, do I think Mac Jones, if he's still there, I don't know if that's necessarily the guy per se. I think there are some other quarterbacks that they might salivate over a little bit more maybe than him potentially. But if Mac Jones is not the guy that they want, Ron Rivera and the rest of them have said, we'll punt this till next year. He has done it the other way around, where you draft the number one quarterback, Cam Newton, and then you bring in the pieces around him. And now he's saying, look, that took a while to put that all together. That's why from 2011 to 2015, when they had that Super Bowl run, they had that 4-year gap. They didn't have all the pieces. Now he's like, well, if I put all the pieces together and, you know, we have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's the bridge quarterback. And one of the things I love the most about the deal is that it's very honest. It's 1 year, it's $10 million up to 12. You know, we don't think you're necessarily the franchise guy, but we think you could be pretty good. And I mean, if we give you the right things, we think we could be successful this year. That's pretty much the line of thinking they have at this moment in time. But if you continue to build the rest of those pieces, you have Curtis Samuel for 3 more years. You have Terry McLaurin. He was on a 4-year contract, so he'd be in his third year of his contract next year, et cetera, et cetera. You have a lot of, like, Antonio Gibson and stuff like that. You still have a lot of pieces on offense that if you get the quarterback next year, you're still in good shape. Nothing has changed. You might be a more attractive destination. I think that was one of the things I talked about in some other podcasts, is that by them winning, by them showing the dramatic shift in the culture as well as the ability to win games and gut them out, they became more attractive than they did, say, last year when they tried to throw more money at Amari Cooper, but he would rather stay in Dallas because when you look at them on paper, they look like the better team. And all healthy, they probably are the better team at a lot of levels. So
right. That,
I don't think they're desperate if, you know, for instance, Mac Jones, like, was to fall outside of the top 10, like, do they go up for that guy per se? I don't know if they're desperate enough to do that, because this is a front office that they like to keep their picks. They don't like to necessarily have less than 8 of them, and they have 8 right now. I think he'd have to be a little bit closer, possibly. I think that he'd have to be, how do I say this? They have somebody they have to be in love with. They're going to go up for that particular guy, or like they have to really feel like that rookie is somebody that can truly, truly take over the reins once Ryan Fitzpatrick's term here is done. Because again, then you're going into training camp with 4 different quarterbacks. Right. Maybe not. You might release somebody, but it's difficult. Just having looked at the 2019 training camp where they had the 3 quarterback race, it's hard to get the reps that somebody needs in order to prepare them adequately to play football. We all know that those reps are paramount. They're extremely important. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Mac Jones is that guy per se. And I know for a fact that they're just not desperate at quarterback. They don't feel the need to do anything that will take away some of their draft capital, or force them in a bad spot monetarily. They don't see the need. They have all these other pieces that they've got in place. They could wait. They really could, and see what happens next year.
All right. I'd like to throw it to you to make the pick, because we've talked about wide receiver potentially being okay. Mayhew's done it in round one before, but they don't need it that badly. Tight end maybe is a bigger deal, but after Kyle Pitts, there's nobody really round one. And so with no Mac Jones either, I'm curious to hear who you take, and with the board falling as it is, who do you think they would target? And then who are you going to go ahead and make the selection for?
Well, as you all know, let's see, Ben, you gave me the list of who was still available, and mm-hmm. the person I would have picked was not there. Even the number two person I may have picked was not there.
Who would those have been, just out of curiosity?
So I would have gone with Awusa Kiramoa. That is the pick I would have made, and that is the one I have made in all of our mock drafts. I mean, one, and I'll explain why I would have picked him if he was still available on the board. If he had still been available, one, they just lost Kevin Pierre-Louis. Mm-hmm. One of the things about him was that not only as a linebacker, but just on defense overall, he had the best coverage grade of anybody on the team last year. And if people were to catch the ball, I think it was what he allowed 17 receptions out of 29 targets for like 120 yards or something along those lines. Basically, when people did catch the ball, they weren't catching it for too much if they did catch it. Number two, he's a fast guy. He did have the ankle injury at the end of the season that did limit him, but he was somebody that moved around quite well. You could trust him on your tight end. You could trust him on a slot. You could trust him with your running back coming out of the backfield. You believe that he could stick with the guy. So the reason that I looked at Awusa Kiramoa is because he's a fast guy. He's a former safety who's about 6'1", if I'm remembering correctly. So he has he understands range. He understands like moving around in space. He understands how to get places. He understands angles. He gets all of those things being former safety. But as a linebacker, he has the build where, again, he's able to keep up with your running backs. He's able to stay with your tight ends, and he shouldn't have an issue bringing any of those people down necessarily with his size. And in the slot, again, like he's a smaller guy, but again, he understands those dynamics of playing defensive back because that's his background. So that's somebody that gives you that opportunity. In addition to the fact that he also was used blitzing wise at Notre Dame. I mean, he just is all over the field. And the other two linebackers they have, John Bostic, Cole Holcomb, both of them very fast guys who are, if you look at the tape, they are frequently in the mix on whatever play is happening. They're somewhere in that range, if anything is going on with the ball carrier. So add another guy like that. And especially because, and this again goes to the story where I was talking about Herney and Mayhew, but also bringing in Del Rio and Rivera, these two former linebackers who excelled at every level they played at, and then with Del Rio as the linebackers coach in Baltimore, if they're bringing in a linebacker, I said this very matter of fact, between that quadruplet, whatever the hell the word is that I need to be using here. The point is that if they pick a linebacker, people should have a good amount of faith in them. This is a group of people that have selected Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, John Beeson, Will Witherspoon. I mean, for the people that are older, more or less like me, who remember Will Witherspoon, you have a Tahir Whitehead, you have DeAndre Levy, Kyle Van Noy. And oh, by the way, Cliff Averill too, by the way. That was a pick that Mayhew made when he was in Detroit. He was a third round pick. These guys are good at picking linebackers for whatever reason. They're really, really good at evaluating linebackers and hitting with those guys. And Shaq Thompson, I should also mention him as well too. So these are Pro Bowlers, all pros. These are guys that can go into the Hall of Fame when their time comes. Like, they're just good at picking linebackers. So if they're picking a guy, I would trust them. So I'm thinking that I know, like, for sure, like, I mean, they could pick somebody else and I would say, all right, well, look, hey, y'all's track record tells me that you guys are pretty capable of identifying a good linebacker. So if it wasn't this guy and it's this guy that you really wanted and it's not a matter of other people pick this guy first, all right, then clearly this guy has some tools that you all see that make you believe he can be a true standout. So that was why I was going to go with him, but he's off the board. I don't know who sniped him. I can't tell which team.
The Broncos did. Yeah, the all Broncos. The way at 9.
Top 10 pick, baby.
What the? I know. Cody is stunned. Cody got him early, and I was like, whoa.
Before what? Micah Parsons.
Why?
Against you and you specifically. He made the pick and he said, Rhiannon wants him at 19.
Jeez, God dang. I mean, look, I just had to do the redraft for last year's draft. And I was like, thank God I'm number 2. Nobody's going to take the pick that I'm going to take.
So right, right.
This is pretty egregious. I mean, I had to watch out for my friend, let's face it, my friend Josh covers the Dolphins. And I know that they might get a linebacker. So I was like, wait a second now, guys, don't do anything drastic here. Cause I know the Patriots are also kind of in that realm too, but like, I'm looking at your board. I don't think they took one.
Parsons went to the Raiders and Owusu-Koramoah went to the Broncos. So those are the two linebackers already off the board.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe the Broncos. Really? Really?
Yep.
Why didn't they take Mac Jones? That could just easily eliminate this problem for me. Shoot.
Hey, they don't want Mac Jones either.
Well, they need quarterback help, so I mean, it would make sense. I don't know.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Are they really sold on who they have there? Because I don't know. Like, it seems like they could use an upgrade or some competition, but that's just my perception of what's happening in Denver. I don't cover the team, so let me just stick to the team I cover. I'm sorry. I try to be serious, but it's hard. It's so much more fun.
It ain't that serious.
I cannot remember the last time this podcast was serious. It was years ago, if it ever occurred.
Where's the fun in that?
Right, there you go.
I'm not seeing it. So, all right, now since the picks that I would have otherwise made have been sniped, that's fine. I will instead take Zaven Collins out of Tulsa.
Okay, so, nice.
Same, but here's the thing: he is bigger than Owusu-Koramoah, but again, he's another guy that just flies around all over the field. And that's one of the things that this team really needs. And also, they need people that are good at having angles when they tackle as well, too. That was a huge problem for this team earlier on, whether it was Landon Collins or Troy Apke. It just was one of those things where those are things that on defense they just need to be better about, because this was a team that gave up quite a few plays of 50 yards or more last year. Passing plays, especially. They had 7 touchdowns of 50 yards or more, which was either tied for the most or was the most in the league last year. So they need guys who can stop those things from happening, like, before they really get started. Not all of them were long passes over the top. Some of them were plays that happened over the middle and guys just couldn't get there. So, I mean, having a guy that has the ability, one, to get those angles right, two, he's got good speed on him as well, and he's good in coverage. It's one of those things where he assesses things extremely quickly when you just look at his tape, when you look at some of the things that he's able to do. It's also – that's a great thing. In addition to the fact that he has leadership skills, which for a linebacker, even if he's playing, whether he's playing middle, sim, or the will, those are just things that you need. You can never have too many guys that can speak up and quickly articulate, this is what's happening, this is what we're seeing, et cetera, et cetera. He's also good in zone, which is what Washington runs. Now, they may be moving a little more towards man, depending on some things, but this is a team that runs zone, and they run it very well, especially with Chris Harris, the defensive backs coach. Cover 3 is a big thing for them. Ron Rivera is especially good at cover 4 and cover 6. So that's something that they could certainly – he would certainly be a good add in that regard, having that back playing in those zone coverages as well, too. So somebody that – and, oh, I didn't even mention the fact he's good at run support. I've talked so much about his coverage skills and all those things and leadership, but he's also a linebacker at 6'4" that – he can get in there and he can help with the run as well, too. And that's a place that Washington really could have stepped up in their defense. They did have the number 2 overall passing defense, number 2 overall defense, but rushing defense was somewhere that they lagged quite a bit. So that's a thing that, and that's part of the reason why I, you know, now that my other picks are gone, I will take Zaven Collins because of those traits.
If you need somebody to talk about the Cat Mafia, linebackers getting sniped in front of them in a mock draft, or anything about the Washington football team, Rihanna Walker's your girl. Rihanna, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Ben, guys, it's a pleasure. Thank you all so much, Trevor. It was a pleasure being on. Thank you guys for thinking of me as always.
Final pick in the top 20 for this guest mock draft series. It is the Chicago Bears. We've got Robert Mays from the Athletic Football Show on the other side of this break to break down everything going on in Chicago. Man, we got a lot to talk about there. We'll see you guys after the break. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, the MLB, the NHL, it's all in full swing now. Award shows, TV shows, reality TV, whatever you want to put your bets on, man, BetOnline is the place to do it. Best of all, it's free to sign up. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you sign up using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all caps, one word, locked on. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Get all the news that you need in just under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Here we go. Pick number 20. It's the Chicago Bears. And man, we got a lot to dig into with the Chicago Bears. We know that we could not do this one alone, even if we wanted to. So we had to bring in the big guns. On with us right now, we have the one and only Robert Mays, who is the host of the Athletic Football Show. Also a noted Chicago Bears fan himself. Robert, thank you so much for joining us, man.
We'll see if I'm happy that I'm here. I usually say, it's usually what I say off the top, but I'm not quite ready to say that with any sort of certainty yet.
No, that's actually completely understandable. So actually, you know, before we get into the roster itself, and we're going to dive into the different parts of what this team might need and who they might be looking at for the draft, I got to ask about the pulse of the team, just where we are right now, because the regime, you know, you got Ryan Pace, the general manager, you have Matt Nagy as head coach. When you look at this thing, Matt Nagy has not finished with a record below 500 yet as a head coach. 12-4 that first year. Now, the defense of Vic Fangio was a big reason why, but 8-8 the following season and 8-8 this past year. But it just feels like it's a lot darker than that. It just feels like they're at a different point than being able to say, hey, they've never finished below 500. What is your take on currently what's going on with Chicago right now, and where is your faith in the current regime as it stands today?
I feel like you're talking about the context of those 8-8 or above seasons is important, because I would argue that the defense has underperformed over the last couple of years, and they've still managed to kind of finish right there around the middle of the pack. And I think that Vic Fangio did have a huge part in the best moments of this team during the Matt Nagy era. I also think this year's 8-8 was a little bit misleading when you consider some of the context and the realities about how they got to 8-8. I also think being 8-8 or better, can there are different types of it, right? Which direction are you headed? And I don't think they're headed in a positive direction. I think that they're right now in a holding pattern with no real path out. You know, I think signing Andy Dalton to a 1-year, $10 million deal to be your absolute starter when you have the 20th pick and no other pathways to a quarterback is the definition of being in no man's land. And I saw this coming a year and a half ago. I wrote in June of 2019, I guess almost 2 years ago. But after they traded for Foles and what they were trying to do, it seemed like that they just had no clear exit plan. There was no strategy to get out of this holding pattern that they're in. And that's how I feel right now. I just think tinkering with an increasingly old defense, and that's one of the more important things to note about this team, mm-hmm. is that they're one of the oldest rosters in the NFL. I always like to look at how many ascending players are on a given roster. How many guys either at the end of and during their first contract or at the beginning of their second are still on the way up. And you just can't find that many of those guys on this team. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the defensive roster. Desmond Trufant, Robert Quinn, Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks is still a very good player, but these guys are all into their 30s. I mean, the fact that Robert Quinn and Desmond Trufant are additions this team made within the last 14 months is terrifying. Like, they're trying to build this way. And that's the problem. I just think that we're nearing the end of something more than we're starting over at any point. And that's why I think you have to question exactly how far this regime can go, even if the results to this point have been pretty good.
Ben, yeah, before you went, I had to ask a follow-up question, because I saw a clip that was going around Twitter a couple of days ago, and it's from, I believe, an old, like, Inside the Draft kind of a show, where after the Bears drafted Trubisky, yeah. I believe it was Ryan Pace who was sitting up there, and he was talking about, hey, Trubisky, in a class that had Mahomes and Watson in it, he goes, number one quarterback on my board, number one quarterback on what seemed to be the consensus board from the scouts, the area scouts, the national scouts. And he was going around the room talking about how Trubisky was almost a consensus number one quarterback to everybody in the room. So when you talked about them not having an exit plan, I know you're somebody who has done a lot of fantastic interviews and sit downs over the course of your journalistic career with football, talking to a lot of guys who have their hands in decision making. Do you think that that mindset just had them shell shocked that Trubisky did not work out and they just could not evolve? Like, do you think that that was kind of the problem with it, moving on from Trubisky after they felt so highly of him?
I think that was part of it, but I also think that you can pivot even if your quarterback fails, if the moves that you made around that give you flexibility. And that's the problem. I think if they had done things a little bit differently outside of the Trubisky pick, they're in a better place than they are right now. Mm-hmm. The issue is that they made so many mistakes outside of that. I mean, just think about, I can list them off. trading multiple second or third round picks, future second or third round picks, to move up for specific guys. Anthony Miller specifically, who they're trying to apparently deal right now. They're just tossing away a future second to go do that. Trading away a future third to go get David Montgomery, who ended up becoming a good running back, but that's still a mistake in the moment. Going out and using what little free agent money you had last year on a guy like Jimmy Graham and Robert Quinn. The Robert Quinn contract, to cut Leonard Floyd and then give that money to Robert Quinn as he turned the corner around age 30 off of 1 year in Dallas when he was available to go to the Cowboys for next to nothing. That's the issue, is that it's not just one or two moves here. I still, the Mac trade people will criticize. That to me is not as egregious as some of the other things that they did. I just think that's the issue, is that on top of the Trubisky mistake, they left themselves without financial or draft capital flexibility consistently. They made the wrong bets over and over again on the wrong sorts of players in the wrong sorts of ways. So that's the issue, is that if you miss out on the quarterback, but your roster has this underlying level of talent, you can pivot. I mean, the Bucs didn't, they let Jameis Winston walk away
right
after he was the number one overall pick. And I understand getting Tom Brady is a huge part of what they did, but this is a team that doesn't push money into future years. I mean, they, for the most part, after that 2016 disaster, when they traded up for Robert Aguayo and the Vernon Hargrave stuff and everything else, they drafted fairly well, because I think most of that stuff comes back to the norm as long as you're not trading away future picks. So there's a way to survive missing on your quarterback. The problem is when you're making tons of terrible bets around that mistake.
I feel like we got to get off of quarterback, or else Robert's going to run. I'm not going to be able to make it the rest of the show. I do want to ask, so we have Andy Dalton now, and I think, you know, Andy Dalton is a perfectly cromulent quarterback, and it's fine, and it's going to be okay for a year, whatever. But the supporting cast, as you brought up, they've taken their gambles, Miller, Montgomery. They've had some draft success in the late rounds, but in general, this offensive depth chart has been deteriorating. Allen Robinson tried to get out of here. It was unsuccessful. I want to know, for you, what's the bigger position of need, the bigger group that needs help, pass catchers or offensive line? Because you have Robinson, who's trying to get out, you have Miller, who might get traded, and behind them it's Darnell Mooney, and it's not much depth. You have an offensive line that they did musical chairs last year after the James Daniel injury, and so you lose Bobby Massey. You have a Fetty on the free agent deal. Is he a guard or is he a tackle? What do they need to improve? Is it, let's shore up this offensive line, let's be able to run the football, or is it, let's fill out our pass catcher unit and be able to throw the ball to a spread and shred approach? What do you want to see them do?
You could throw a dart. I don't think it matters. I think either one of them is, could be the answer, because they're glaring holes at each one. If they're dead set on moving on from Anthony Miller, they need another starting wide receiver. Like, I mean, that's the problem here. It's almost the reason they couldn't let Jimmy Graham go, despite him being a massive overpay, because they need people to catch the football, because there's no one on the roster. And that's why people, when they were being talked about with the Russell Wilson trade, or even with Deshaun Watson before, you know, of all of the things that transpired have, I was so mystified that people were framing this as though they were a quarterback away from competing.
Right.
Like, a very good quarterback definitely covers up a lot of your flaws, but this is a team with needs all over the place. Like, you can make an argument for corner, safety, pass catcher, and offensive line, and you could have pretty solid ground to stand on. So I tend to think they'd be better served by going offense with early in this draft, possibly with their first two picks. And I think you could go offensive line and pass catcher in either direction. I mean, Elijah Wilkinson was not playing very well for the Broncos last year. I mean, it's not as if he's going to be a stopgap starter you feel good about, and there's a glaring hole at receiver. So I think that you should ideally you'd find both of those guys in the first two rounds, but God, don't we know that having to plug spots, having to find starters in the first and second round, is a very dangerous world to live in. This team is not in a good spot, and I think that that's what people get wrong pretty often about the rest of the roster.
How has this defense really been post Vic Fangio? Because I think that there's a lot of notable names here. Of course, Khalil Mack, they have Roquan Smith, they have Akeem Hicks. You've named a handful of them already, but you know, you mentioned also at the top that you feel like the defense has underperformed a little bit. Now they no longer have Fuller with them. I mean, what is this? What is the outlook of the defense going forward? And then how has it kind of been since Vic Fangio? Has it been just a steady decline, or what's this been like with this group?
I think it has been a steady decline. If you look at the numbers in the second half of last year, they're pretty drastic. I want to say they were I don't want to throw out a specific number, but it was in the back half of the league in EPA per play and during the second half of last season. They were not a good defense, and they're trending in the wrong direction. And I am curious what it's going to look like with Sean Desai now as the defensive coordinator there. He was somebody who worked under Vic Fangio, worked with Brandon Staley, and comes from the Fangio tree, I guess is how you would describe it. And I think moving away from that system was a problem for this team. I mean, you look at a guy like Eddie Jackson, who playing in that Fangio too high split safety system was one of the better defensive backs in the NFL and was paid as such. He has not played very well over the last couple of years, not nearly to the level that he had when Fangio was around. So I'm curious what that will look like. And if that style of defense and the approach that he brings can bring a little bit more juice to what they do, because I think they still do have a decent amount of talent. And, you know, I don't want to bet on them in the same way. I don't want to look at what Brandon Staley did with the Rams last year and say the Bears could do that with a young, exciting defensive coordinator. But I do think having someone that brings some fresher ideas to the table, and it's a conversation we've had a lot on our show in the last few months about where we look for defensive coaches and innovation. And it's a conversation I've had with a lot of people. And I think that the Bears are a perfect microcosm of that. You have Chuck Pagano as a deposed head coach coming in, an older coach. He's been around for a long time. If you're looking for acceptable defensive play, I think going with a guy like Chuck Pagano is fine. If you need your defense great, I would rather trend in a more interesting direction. And I think that's what Sean Desai possibly gives them.
All right, Robert, I want to hear who the pick is for you, but I want to hear also what you're looking at, because we've talked about glaring holes now. I'm going over my list on the whole roster, which means that there's a lot of different directions we can go. Obviously, quarterback remains a position of interest, and Mac Jones is still sitting there. So for you, board at 20, who are you thinking of? Who are you expecting the Bears to look for? And then the choice finally is yours. If Robert Mays were calling the shots, as he rightfully should be, who would he take at 20?
I'd be so terrible at this job. As the board currently sits, and you guys have put me in a bad position with it laid out like,
hey, blame the other 19 people before you. We don't do this.
Not us.
I would take Mac Jones. Like, I absolutely would take Mac Jones if he was still there at 20, just because I would take the dice roll on quarterback because they're in a position of desperation. And I think he's going to be very situation dependent. You know, Ben, you and I talked about this on our show yesterday. I think he's the type of guy that if you set him up and you point him in the right directions, I think there are aspects to his game that are exciting and that you can win with. It's the same way we talk about Kirk Cousins, but Kirk Cousins was a fourth round pick. And I still think that if you're a team like Chicago, that would be a risk worth taking just because you need an answer there. I also don't have a ton of faith in that coaching staff's ability to get the most out of him like I would with another staff. So even if I think the Bears should take him, I wouldn't have a ton of faith in their ability to get a lot out of him. I also don't think he's going to be available. So to me, the more realistic conversation here would be the offensive linemen that are still on the board. And I just think Elijah Vera Tucker, the players you guys still have available, is the best player. And I think he's a guard long-term, but if you wanted to put him at right tackle this year, and then as things shuffle around, he moves to guard in his second season, it's almost like the opposite of what we do with a lot of guys, like the opposite of what happened with Tunsil or somebody like that. But I just think he's the best player still available at a position theoretically of need for them. So I would take him, but if with the way this list is gone, I think I would probably take Mac Jones if he were still there.
Okay. All right. So then that would be Mac Jones here in this guest mock draft, but Robert did a very nice job of laying out, hey, if Mac Jones isn't there, which I agree with him. I don't think that Mac Jones is going to make it to number 20, then they'd probably be looking at offensive linemen. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit here, because there's a good chance that Elijah Vera Tucker is also not on the board. Would you still stick offensive line? Like, would you like a Tevin Jenkins or a Christian Darrisaw or something like that?
I think so. Darrisaw is not available in the list that you guys gave me.
Correct.
But Tevin Jenkins is. And I think Tevin Jenkins could make a ton of sense. I mean, he played right tackle in college. I think that he brings a real physicality that this group has been missing. I just think that sort of influence matters in an offensive line room. I think we've seen it over and over and over again. If you have one guy that plays with that sort of style, it can start to infect the rest of the the position group, I think he absolutely could bring something that they miss. So realistically, I think he could be a target for them at 20 if the board falls in the way that we assume it will based on all the conversations we've had over the last 6 months.
Ben, what do you think about Mac being a potential pick with this potentially being a landing spot here for him?
Listen, Robert told us that the Bears are making trade-ups for players that they like and that Mac's probably not going to be there at 20. So I'm putting two and two together, and I'm saying we're just going to make a small move up for Mac Jones. Don't worry, it's going to go great. Right, I think that, yeah, everybody thinks Mac Jones is situation-dependent, and nobody thinks Chicago's situation is ideal. And so that's the tricky part for Chicago both and for Washington, as we talked about earlier with Rhiannon, the difficulties of needing a quarterback but not being early enough in the draft to go get one who you wouldn't yourself be propping up. It's purgatory, and the Bears have been enjoying it for quite some time now.
Hey, you know what? Just make a cool trade from 20 to 4, go up and get Matt Jones, and yeah, I mean, like, the rest of the franchise would be great. Y'all, if you're listening to this podcast, there's a damn good chance that you're already subscribed to the Athletic Football Show that Robert hosts. He does an incredible job on that podcast. If you're not subscribed to it, please do so now. Also, follow him on Twitter, at Robert Mays. Robert, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Great to talk with you.
And that is a wrap on the top 20 for this guest mock draft series, with Mac Jones finally going off the board here at number 20, the Chicago Bears. Before we get out of here, I got to remind you guys about the best tasting protein bars on the planet over at BuiltBar.com. 18 incredible flavors, including some like salted caramel, double chocolate, mint brownie, banana bread, lemon almond cheesecake, apple almond crisp. I mean, like, there's so many different flavors. We know that you're going to be able to find one that you love. And the best part is these protein bars, they're great for your diet. Low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, relatively low in calories as well. So you can eat them throughout the day. You start off a breakfast replacement if you want to, right before a workout, right after a workout, whatever it is. These are just going to be, everybody is always looking for a protein bar that you just grab and go, that you can have on you, that you absolutely love. BuiltBar.com's got you. Go over to BuiltBar.com right now. Use the promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED and then 15 to get 15% off your next order, no matter how much you're ordering. So use that promo code LOCKED ON. Go find yourself some bars that you love over at BuiltBar.com. Taking a little bit of a break from the guest mock draft series, Ben and I are going to be doing our own mock draft for Mock Draft Monday coming up tomorrow. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.